The topic we are going to discuss now is how much freedom we have got in the choices that we make. From Kishore Chandiramani, Emotions Clinic, Education and Training Center, Staffordshire, England. I believe in what most religions and philosophies say, that we all have free will. That who we are today is the outcome of the choices we had made in the past, including in a previous life as well, if one believes in it. But, I must confess, so far, I have not been able to figure out which thought of mine was a product of my free will, and which one, an automatic result of some previous cause inside or outside of myself. Surely, the creator of a thought should be able to differentiate between these two categories. Otherwise, how can you say that one has exercised his free will here, and should be held responsible for, or given credit, for it? I often get a feeling that I cannot create any thought. They happen to me due to a variety of factors, and I simply say yes to one of them, or dismiss an existing thought and it gets replaced by several other new thoughts. Or I tune in my mental radio to a different feeling state so that relevant thoughts start flowing through it. Various thoughts are knocking on the doorsteps of my mind, and I say yes or no to them. That is my free will. Sigmund Freud talked about psychic determinism. That every mental event is determined by certain events that pre-existed in the mind. This cause and effect logic does not allow any room for free will, as anything that we experience is the effect of some cause and that cause was in turn the effect of some other cause in the past. However, there is a room for inserting free will at the level of the causes, that we can create new causes out of our free will. However, one can argue against this as well, that there must be certain factors, material or building blocks inside of us, in the free will department, that make that intentions happen, or create the free will, and it doesn't come out of the blue, from nothingness, and the argument can be extended further by asking, is the person conscious of all this process, to be able to take the credit for it, or be held accountable for it? Existentialism says, our existence precedes our essence. The essence here means a blueprint, grand design, purpose, one's calling in life. Existentialism explains it this way. Imagine when the first chair in this world was made. The maker of the chair had a blueprint of the chair in his mind, before the chair came into existence. Which means essence, that is the blueprint, precedes existence, that is coming into being. According to existentialism, the same does not apply to human beings. According to them, humans exist first, and then they create a plan or blueprint for themselves. They have freedom to think and choose what they want, essence. And that means, for human beings the existence precedes essence. The religious understanding would be like, a father gives his son a certain amount of money, and a plane ticket, and says, you go to the Heathrow Airport and take the flight to Sydney, and you will meet Mr. X there. He will take you to a farm there, that I have bought for you, and you look after it. And there is a girl there. You meet up with her, and see if you want to marry her. Existentialism will say, there is no father, and no girl for you. You ring your bank manager, and find out how much money you have got in your account. Withdraw the amount you want. Decide where you want to go, and what vocation you want to pursue. According to existentialism, you are the result of all the choices you have made in the past, and fully responsible for who you are today. It is because you have free will, of course within your thrown conditions, or limit conditions, that are dictated by your genetics, and environment, that you did not choose. In my view, it is possible to integrate these two points of view, that is free will and determinism, and the following example explains it. A cattle is tied to a pole with a rope of a certain length. The length of the rope will determine how much freedom the animal has to roam around and graze. And beyond that circumference, it is not free. We are also free within the parameters of our thrown conditions or limit conditions, such as our genetic makeup, our family, physical body, and brains that we have got. But this rope is magical. If we make the right choices and use our free will appropriately, the rope gets longer and longer, and a day will come when we are completely free, even transcending our genetics, and going beyond our biology would be possible. But this will depend upon our efforts in exercising our free will in a proper way. Rollo May, an existential thinker, has described this free will in terms of the game of chess. To begin with, both players have equal freedom to make the moves. But if one player is playing badly, his choices keep getting limited, until he reaches a point where his king is under threat, and he cannot save it. Let us take the example of the freedom accorded to an average citizen in any given society. If he abuses it, his freedom will keep getting curtailed, to a point where he might find himself in prison, or drug rehab center, or even face gallows. If he exercises the freedom responsibly, his freedom will keep increasing by way of having more money, greater social influence, and greater ability. Sometimes, what appears to be resigning to our destiny or surrendering our will to the will of God, as being fatalistic, may in fact be an exercise of free will. It makes us free. Here is an example, from the audiobook, available on YouTube, as The Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. A weaver sold clothes in market. When any customer came to his shop, asked the price of a particular garment, he would say, "By the will of Lord Rama, the thread cost 1 rupee. By the will of Lord the labor cost 4 annas, by the will of Lord profit is 2 annas. So by the will of Lord the final price is 1 rupee 6 annas. People will immediately pay the price because of his trustworthiness. One night, he was sitting outside in the veranda of his house. A few robbers were passing by, and they wanted a carrier. So they abducted him, and piled their stolen goods onto him. Soon after, a security guard came, and the robbers fled away, leaving him with the stolen goods. The weaver got arrested, and was produced before the magistrate the next morning. The villagers came to his rescue and spoke to the magistrate. The magistrate asked the weaver to describe what had occurred. Said the weaver, "Sir, by the will of Lord, I was sitting in the veranda. By the will of Lord, it was very late in the night. By the will of Lord, I was meditating. By the will of Lord, a band of robbers passed that way. By the will of Lord, they dragged me away with them. By the will of Lord, they broke into a house. By the will of Lord, they piled the load on my head. By the will of Lord, the watchman came up. And by the will of Lord, I was caught. Then by the will of Lord, I was kept in prison. And this morning the will of Lord has brought me before thee." The magistrate, seeing his innocence and honesty, released him. Coming out of the court, the weaver said to his friend, "The will of Lord has released me." A philosophical and spiritual analysis of this story here could be that, as soon as you accept something as the will of God, your mind is freed from a lot of analysis. The unhappiness in your mind turns into equanimity. This equanimous part of the mind can properly exercise one's free will as it is free of the constraints of one's emotions. You are not constrained in any way, and you are free to exercise your free will to change your circumstances. Accepting the notion of will of God doesn't stop us from doing whatever we think is appropriate, as we can see the will of God working through our actions as well. Accepting the idea of will of God can help us remain equanimous, that is emotionally neutral, and this equanimous part our mind starts neutralizing the other emotions in our mind and starts getting bigger and bigger. This links in with the above example of how the rope gets bigger and bigger. Stephen Covey, a modern-day self-help guru, explains this in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, as the circle of influence and the circle of concern. The model is based on 2 circles. The first is our circle of concern. This includes an entire range of things: attitudes in society, the work culture in the organization you work for, the things your colleagues do, and so on. The actual list will depend on the individual, but the important thing to understand is that there may be little you can do about many of these things, since they are outside of your influence. Devoting energy on them may be a waste of time, the equivalent of shouting at the television if you do not like a program, and the time and the energy once spent has gone waste. Our circle of influence will be much smaller. It includes the things we can do something about. The extent of this will obviously be related to our abilities and resources. The key is to focus your energy on those things that you can influence. This will enable you to make effective changes. If you do this, you will find your circle of influence starts to increase. Others will see you as an effective person, and this will increase your power. Conversely, if all your energy goes into those things you cannot change, your circle of influence will shrink. Thank you. This audio was brought to you from the Emotions Clinic, Education, and Training Center, Staffordshire, England,